Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now, imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, 15% off your first order with code WONDERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Nerds Podcast number 430. What's up, guys? Postful intro. Hey.
What?
Right back to annoying them.
The first 2 seconds.
Clowns in a room together. You never know what's going to happen.
No, we know exactly what's going to happen. And it makes us angry. We're going to complain about it on the internet. At Midnight is currently on Comedy Central. That is the post-Colbert show that I host, that Matt Myra writes on. And Jonah Ray is going to be on pretty soon.
Wow.
Yeah, you're on Monday, November 4th with Howard Kramer and Ali Wong. Scott Ackerman's coming up. Steve Agee, Natasha.
Two out of three.
Reese Darby. Reese Darby's going to be on the show.
Oh, Reese Darby?
Yeah, Ron Funches, The Sklars, Paul F., Julie Klausner, Hodgman, Rob Delaney, Grace Helbig, Koechner.
Oh, look at that.
See you in a bit. So, yeah, and I mean, you can watch it on ComedyCentral.com or Hulu.com if you missed it the night before.
Hulu Plus, use the promo code something.
We don't have a promo code in that one. But we do have a promo code for Carbonite, which is weird considering the guest.
Now, they all know who the guest is.
Let's do the Carbonite ad first.
When you wanna
back up a criminal
somebody
who owes you money,
oh,
and you wanna freeze him,
Udaba, yes, I do Udaba.
That means Carbonite. Carbonite.com is online backup. Back up all your files. Back up all your space pirates. With plans starting at $59 a year, it's your better backup plan.
Back it up onto your ship and then take it to Tatooine.
Then when tragedy strikes, then you can totally, like, let's just say that your hard drive falls into the pit of Sarlacc, where it's slowly digested over 1,000 years now. You can retrieve your files from any computer using Carbonite.com. It's your better backup plan for home and small business. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist. Get 2 bonus months with purchase. That's Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist.
Tatooine's the perfect place to advertise Carbonite because they have a backup sun.
They do.
Nice. That's what my dad referred to me as.
Don't worry. We got a backup.
Who's working now?
Yeah.
Wait, did I just shit on your family?
I don't know.
I don't either.
I did.
Let's talk about this episode for a sec, because it has been mentioned in the past. This is Harrison Ford, and I've been nervous about putting this one up. I'm not going to lie. I don't think I did a good job.
We were so young back then.
This was in July.
This is also, it was really stressful even getting to it. I believe it's going to be less stressful if we ever get to interview Obama. Because it was just so much security.
Yeah, they kept changing. So we went to the hotel. They had him in a hotel room at the Hard Rock in San Diego Comic Con, and they kept switching the room. So we'd show up in one room, and then we'd open the door, and it was almost just like a guy there going, "This is not the right room." And then we'd have to go to another room.
Your Harrison Ford is in another castle.
Your Harrison Ford is in another castle. That's exactly what happened. And so, and we got there, and I was feeling fine. Like, I felt like I got this. I was so busy at Comic Con that I didn't really have time to freak out about it. And
but you got to do that while doing the interview.
I did. I don't know what happened. I mean, I apologize. I wish I had done a better job. All I can say is and this has never happened before. I was so nervous that I couldn't contain the fandom. I was fine, and then all of a sudden, when you're sitting a foot from him, it's just. And then I'm looking in his eyes, and then something like. On a very molecular level, it's just like Han and Indy. Like, I just couldn't.
Yeah.
Like, everything, my brain froze. I had notes for the first time. I don't. And And I feel like he sort of revels in the awkwardness. Like, he's not like a guy like Tom Hanks that'll bail you out.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh, I, you know, and in a non pretentious way, go, I know what my position is and I'll kind of help you through.
He'll
this.
Let it sit and stew.
He'll just let it sit and kind of stare at you. And then, but, you know, then at the end, he sort of admits, like, I just like fucking with people.
Yeah.
So it was.
In fairness to him, he flew down that day on his own plane.
Hey, listen, I'm not blaming him. I'm taking the blame on this. I feel like if I had been better, then it would have gone better.
No, I thought it went as good as it can go.
Look, and the 430 episodes that we've had on the show, this is the only time this has happened, and I think there's probably maybe two or three people in the world that would have that effect on me. And Steve Martin being probably another one that I would probably not be able to contain it. So.
And our Lord JC.
So all I can say is, you know, I'm sorry to front load with a big disclaimer podcast, and a bunch of apologies. I probably should just shut up and play it. But all I can say is we did our best. You know, we fucking did our best. And
guess what? Our best wasn't good enough.
Please enjoy the episode.
Sometimes your best ain't good enough. Yeah. You've got to freeze yourself in carbonite.com.
Don't check the comments. They don't make no sense.
Please pretend it went perfectly. And afterwards, pat us on the back.
But you know,
why is he going to sing every episode?
I apologize to you guys for not being a better shepherd. I apologize to Harrison Ford, and I apologize to the listeners.
No, I thought it was good.
We told them up top. We're telling them up top. Afterwards, they're going to be like, yeah, you could have done better. But you know what? It was still 45 minutes with Harrison Ford, and you know. Yeah. And I felt like it was a great learning experience. So fuck it. Here, I'm happy about it as we go to episode number 430. With Harrison Ford.
Who, by the way, is starring in Ender's Game, which opens Friday, November 1st.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Thanks for being on the podcast, Harrison Ford.
Am I on now?
This is it, man.
Oh, great. Good.
It's already started. Don't you feel the energy?
I do. I feel like an energy.
An energy. Yeah. An undefinable energy.
With no specific value. Energy, just an energy. I thought it was gravity, but now I know better.
You're being pulled into our gravity.
Yes, I guess that's it.
So this is your second Comic-Con in San Diego.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. You were here for Cowboys and Aliens a few years ago.
The movie that dare not speak its name.
The Voldemort of film?
Pardon?
The Voldemort? We're not allowed to say the name?
The Voldemort, yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yep. That was the year that there was a stabbing in Hall H.
I didn't do it.
Are you sure?
I was in full sight of the audience at all times.
But you didn't plan it somehow with mirrors or a body double or something to stab someone and then get up onto the panel?
No. Next question, please.
You seem very agitated about this line of questioning already.
No. I'm just still warming up. You haven't seen agitation.
All right, we'll try not to get to agitation. Actually, you're someone I never prepare questions for people, and I never, because I like to be conversational, but...
That's really good. I never prepare answers.
That's good. This is going to go great.
Even while I'm talking them.
So you just start, and then it ends up somewhere.
Yep.
But with someone like you, there's too many things to talk about.
Oh, let's try anyway.
All right. Let's start with, I took some questions from Reddit. I'll get to those in a little bit. Let's just talk about there was a period of time when you first started where it was like, you're doing a lot of television, you're doing a lot of guest stars. Was this what you foresaw? Did you ever foresee this? Is your career something that you wanted, or was it like, oh, you're a working guy and you just keep working?
So we're going to start at the beginning.
We're going to start at the beginning.
And we're going to get...
What hospital were you born in?
It was my idea to start in the middle, go to the beginning and end.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. The question was, when I was first starting?
Yeah.
What did I think I was doing? What did I hope for?
Yeah.
Why was I doing what I was doing?
Yeah.
Thought it was better than a real job. I imagined being an actor was working for a finite period of time with people you never met before, doing something very specific, and then going away doing another project, another idea, working on a new set of problems with a different group of people. It was like being in the Navy, only not killing people.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you... because a lot of your other...
That's what I wanted to do, because I didn't have any other idea of how to make a living.
Yeah. Do you... But the stuff that you were doing, like, you fly planes, carpentry, those are handsy. Those are handsy types of professions, and acting is not really a handsy type of profession, I guess.
Is it? I don't know. I think acting is mostly problem solving. It's figuring out how, in the context of the moment with the group of people you're with, how to best bring the ideas that are part of the story that you're telling to the audience to give them emotional expression, take advantage of all of the elements that you have at your disposal.
Yeah.
To bring ideas to visual expression.
Did you have the ability to bring those ideas early on, or was it after you became more successful that directors are like, what are your ideas?
No, I had no idea what I was doing.
Do you ever feel like you have an idea of what you're doing? Does that ever come?
Yeah.
When?
There was a time when I began to not be constrained by fear or almost anything else, and began to really enjoy the process of storytelling.
Does that take 10 years, 20 years? Does it take a certain level of success?
It took a certain level. It was coincident with the people that I was working with accepting input from me. And it didn't really happen at the beginning. I would, my kid saw a tarantula. And I just came back from Brazil, and my son went on a walk, and he saw a couple of tarantulas. And I told him the story that when I was doing a television show, I was playing a teacher at a biology teacher at an all girls school, who was sleeping with the head of the Joan Hackett, who was the head of the girls school, and also attempting to seduce all of the girls in his class.
Sure.
And he gave a lecture and an illustrated lecture with a tarantula. And knowing that I had this job about a week in advance, I went out and went to a pet store and bought a tarantula, and became comfortable with the tarantula. And when I went to show up for the job, I took in a tin can, a coffee can with holes punched in the top, I took my pet tarantula. And I went to the director and I said, "Hey, look, I happen to have this personal tarantula."
It's in your writer now.
That I would like to use. And he's "What? You have what?" I said, "Here, look." And the took it out. He said, Get that out of here. Put that thing back on. Take it out of here. Don't, no. And so I had to do the same with a ball of black yarn that the prop man had.
After all that tarantula prep work, and he made you do it with a ball of yarn?
You see what I'm saying? Until they let me actually work with the tarantula, I really fucking hated it.
Yeah.
So, can you say that here?
Yes, you can say whatever you want.
All right. So, the question is whether or not it was fun at the beginning.
Yeah.
And no, it wasn't always fun at the beginning. When it got to be fun, actually, one of the first times it got to be fun was with George Lucas working on American Graffiti. A lot of it was fun because he allowed participation and invited it.
And you like driving so much.
Huh?
And you like driving so much.
I didn't mind. I didn't mind driving. I didn't mind. I didn't mind any of it. I had fun.
So what happened to the tarantula?
Huh? What tarantula?
That'd be great if you just made up that whole story.
I don't need to be good.
You release him back into the world. But was that comfort level for American Graffiti when you guys
put it in the back of that guy's car?
You don't want to work with the tarantula? I'm going to send you home with a fucking tarantula. Was that comfort level that you guys got on American Graffiti, that sort of helped when you guys started working on other stuff? You guys were already friends. You already had the relationship.
It was years later that we worked together again.
Yeah.
But but it was something that I was always looking for, a level of collaboration,
yeah,
that I thought was both appropriate and for me a better avenue to getting a better result. You didn't have to do what I wanted to do, but you know, at least let's talk about it a little bit.
Yeah. What about Apocalypse Now? Can you bring anything to that, or is it just like stand over there and say your lines?
No. Francis was also very collaborative and loud of invention. I was working with J.D. Spradlin in that scene. He never said the same thing twice, so I never had to say the same thing twice. And we had a great time. Great time. It was the only scene in Apocalypse that was scheduled for 9 days. We were done, and I was home 5 days after.
Oh wow!
Yeah. So it was, and it was fun, really fun.
Katie, throw a tarantula out there, then. Close the door. I kind of want to explore this idea of getting comfortable and sort of figuring out who you are. Did you have an idea in the beginning who you are and what you wanted to be, or were you just along for the ride?
You know, the idea that I had was that I enjoyed telling stories. I enjoyed working with a group of people. First time I was ever involved with acting was in college and doing plays in college. And I really, for the first time, found a group of people that I was, you know, relatively comfortable with. I was always a loner. I was, you know, not involved in athletics or student government or learning anything for that matter. But I did really at first scare the shit out of me, and then as I began to overcome that fear, I began to really enjoy the process of telling stories. I always loved stories.
Since you played so many characters, it's, I think, kind of, these are sort of the archetypal male leading man. This is what it means to be a man, sort of a character. Do you feel like you had that in you before, or do you feel like you discovered that along the way with some of these characters?
I don't think I ever thought about that at all, ever. And I'm not really going to think about it now. So,
well, there's a
no. I mean, that's not the way you approach a character through thinking about what it represents as an archetype. You don't do that. You tell the story of this character in this circumstance, this particular person. What are the complications of the situation? What is the real relationship between you and the other people that are on screen with you?
Mm-hmm.
Can you bring some real emotional relationship and contact into the telling of the story? What is the story? Haven't you already told, you know, I mean, the first time Stephen and I worked together on Indiana Jones movie, we got we used to fly on airlines, you know. And so we were sitting next to each other going to London, and we went through the script and, you know, get through the script and said, wait a second, we did that in the last scene. We don't have to do that again. What else can we do in this scene? The story ends here. You know, there's no sense shooting this next page. We made the point, and it's a better cut if you just get out of it here, right?
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
So you like to streamline. You like to streamline and figure out where...
No, I like to streamline. You know, streamlining is important. Densifying, if you would.
Sure.
Complicating without being complicated.
Yeah.
So you like to find the best way to tell that story.
I like to tell the best way to tell a story, and I like to make it, I like to try and make it fun for the audience to hear that story or to participate in that story. And participate is a really important part because, you know, I always go through a script and the make margin notes when I'm reading for the first time. And one of the most common ones is talk story. We're talking about the story. We are not demonstrating what it's like to be part of the telling of this story. So the audience is the one who's hearing this story, but we're participating in, yeah, in a circumstance, in an event. Don't talk about the story, for Christ's sake. Show people, allow them to participate in the story, and they'll get what the story is about.
Yeah. So you'd like to, rather than having like a, you know, page of expositional dialogue, you'd like to just sort of grab people and go.
No, exposition is sometimes very important, but you there are ways of disguising it.
Yeah.
There are ways of expressing it physically. There are lots of ways of disguising necessary exposition. But talking about it is one of the least effective.
Right.
So when you're with a character for 6, 7, 8 years, when you're making, you know, when your second movie and then the third movie, do you feel like the character has changed? Do you feel like, oh, he's more this, or I wish I hadn't done that, or
no,
he's evolved?
No, I don't think that's it. I think what you do is that when we were doing the Indiana Jones movies, for instance, I thought it was important that we bring something new about the character. That was really important about the character to the audience's to the audience, and that's and we did that. We did that with introducing my father. Mm-hmm. We did that with introducing my son, and suddenly the audience would say, "Hey, wait, there's a whole new stuff here." And it makes it more interesting, I think, for an audience.
Is it sort of like, did you ever think television might be a fun thing to do long term, or has film kind of always been?
No.
Not at all.
No. And the reason I didn't is because it's like a real job. You go to the same place and do the same thing day after day. But there's wonderful stuff now being done on television, wonderful writing, great production values. So I'm not saying.
Yeah. Nothing. But just as a performer, you like movies.
Well, I'd like to, I like the life in the trenches. I like having to get it right the first time. I like movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
What gets you excited when you get a script and you are looking at it for
quality?
Yeah.
Quality. Doesn't fall apart in my hands. Turn it over and I don't see the, all the artifice or falseness that's put in. It's not plastic.
Right.
But that's such a small piece, too, though. Well. Like, there's that's one piece of it, but how do you ensure sort of a holistic quality where it's like, well, it's shot well, it's directed well, the lighting was good.
By being with people that are ambitious. By making sure that at least 6 times out of 10 you ensure that you work with people that are ambitious to make a really good movie, that recognize quality, that have artistic ambition, not artistic pretension, but
sure,
artistic because there's a lot of craft skills involved, and there's a lot of intellectual process involved, so you want smart people, and you want people that know their craft, or employ other people that know parts of the craft that they're not so familiar with.
Did you ever think about directing stuff? Or?
No, it's too hard. It takes too long. Doesn't pay well.
If you were going to, what kind of movie would you want to take on?
No,
not at all.
He's not doing it.
No,
there's no part.
No.
You fly planes. That's way more intense than directing a movie, don't you think?
No. I mean, no. Nobody flies a plane for a year and a half to one place. then lands, and then spends another year in the hangar.
Giving notes on it?
Taking it apart and putting it back together.
Let's talk about that flight you just took.
Yeah. Listening to notes of anybody who happens to walk through the hangar. telling you, don't put the wings there. That's all wrong.
And then 6 months of going around the country and just talking about the flight.
Yeah. I couldn't do it.
I think it'd be cool if you had 8 wings.
Yeah. Kids love 8 wings.
Yeah. Buffalo wings.
How do you know what to do? Is there anything sort of scary about having, obviously when you first start, you sort of take the work that comes along, but is there anything that's a little...
Not always. That's how I became a carpenter, is because I didn't like the work that was covering my way. I was under contract with Columbia, and I was under contract with Universal, and then I did episodic television for a while, and after about 5 years of that, I thought I was going to wear out my face doing crap, and that if I didn't set my goals on to be more ambitious about what I did, I wasn't going to have a chance. So I stopped taking every. I had a child and was married, and had bills to pay, and so I in order to be able to turn down acting jobs that I didn't really want to do, I had to have another source of income that was legal. So I became a carpenter, and I did that. I'd go do an acting job. I did The Conversation. I went back to carpentry. I did, I don't know, a bunch of things. Went back to carpentry until Star Wars came along, and then I didn't go back to carpentry anymore.
Do you miss it?
There are parts of it I still enjoy, and sometimes I get to do it, but mostly I pay to have other people do it.
Sure.
The way I wanted.
Yeah.
The way I would do it myself.
Yeah. Were you a good carpenter?
Yeah. Yep.
It's kind of interesting. They're pretty, I guess, it's kind of similar. It's like sort of like acting. You on a carpenter job, you come in, work on a thing, and then move to a totally different place and work on something totally different.
Well, until I got sick to death of the metaphor, I would talk about that carpentry was, preparing your materials, lining out your process, putting a brick on a brick, and building something.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you do in acting, in filmmaking. You decide what you want it to look like, and take it apart in your mind, and put it back together piece by piece.
Yeah. So do you think that there's a delineation between, like, the craft of it and the art of it, or do you think that...
No, I think craft is everything. I think... art comes from comfort, circumstance, opportunity. But without craft, it ain't going to happen.
Yeah. Mosquito Coast was a movie that I really enjoyed a lot.
Me too.
Did you? What was the process of making that film, and what did it mean to you?
Well, mostly I was attracted to the language of Scott Thurow's book. And it was brilliant. And a lot of that language became dialogue in the film. And I thought the character was a wonderful opportunity for me to do something unexpected. But that is not a kind of character that you normally see in movies. And I was right, because nobody... Nobody went, or few enough people went. I don't remember exactly how well it did, but it wasn't a huge hit at the box office.
Did that bother you at all, or were you like, I still made the movie I wanted to make?
No, it didn't, because at that point I was lucky enough to be able to work on a regular basis, whether a film did well or not, I was onto another job before anybody knew that it wasn't going to work.
Yeah. with a character like from Mosquito Coast. It was Allie, right?
Allie, yeah. Allie, not McBeal.
Allie, not McBeal.
Allie Fox.
he basically, his intentions were good. I mean, you kind of go, okay, I kind of see where he's coming from, but then it just gets, and then he just becomes.
Yeah. He goes, I think the psychological term for it is apeshit.
He goes a little apeshit, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he goes a little apeshit.
Yeah.
What was it that happened?
To Allie Fox?
Yeah.
He began believing himself. He stopped participating in the world. He went away, you know, to a place where he could control everything. And when he did, it all got sideways on him.
Is that a bad thing to happen to someone?
It wasn't a good thing for him or any of his family.
Yeah,
or the people he was close to. And he died.
He did. Yeah. In a very bad way.
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you keep, when you can do anything you want, like, how do you keep it, how do you keep from buying the hype? You know, like.
I never bought it. I never believed it. I live with the son of a bitch. I know he didn't have any idea what he's doing.
Are there two guys? Is there a... I don't see you do a lot of interviews, but the ones that I've seen were really funny.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Maybe you have me confused with somebody
else. No, you were great on Kimmel, and you're really funny on Conan.
I do a lot of interviews. I do this all the time.
I know it feels like you do it all the time, but I think as a fan, I feel like I don't see you. I know you did Actor Studio, and I know you do the talk show circuit every once in a while.
I do.
Whenever he gets a movie coming out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm in it for the money.
That seems to be working out okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, I mean that in the nicest possible way. I mean, I take seriously the responsibility of trying to promote the films, you know, that are... that I do.
Yeah.
Because nobody goes into this with the intention of making a movie that's not good.
Right.
So I try and support... I'm representing the ambitions of the people that I work with. So I rarely say I'm not going to work for a movie.
How involved are you in the process? Do you...
Depends on the movie.
And how personal it is, or just how...
No, how big the part is, whether it's the leading part, whether it's you know, a supporting role, whether it's a character part, whether I feel I can, you know, whether the director and I have a close collaboration, whether I'm involved in the writing of the script before it comes along, whether I'm a producer, circumstances are different all the time.
Do you like to just breeze in and be a supporting character and not have to bear too much responsibility?
It has its charms, but I don't do it that often.
Yeah. Do you ever feel?
No.
Do you ever feel satisfied?
I told you no.
He knew what I'm you were so sorry. Say. No, you're right.
You fucking listen.
I don't. Sorry, I just like my own voice.
What was the question?
Well, I want to know, like, do you ever feel satisfied? Like, do you ever step back and go, ah, I feel like I've done, you know, I've done a lot of the stuff that I want to do. Or do you feel like, oh, not enough. There's more to do.
Oh, no, I love the work. I don't really ever feel ultimate, final satisfaction. Sometimes I look at something and say, oh, too bad, that was okay. But in the process of working on a daily basis, you come to the set in the morning and you start working with the words and jiggering a scene and getting, that's for me. That process is the satisfaction. It's not when the movie comes out and whether people like the movie or not. It's this day-to-day business of making a movie that I like more than anything.
What about all the stuff that comes around the movie business that you...
You mean money?
Well, there's money gives rise to sort of like weird studio politics.
I'm talking about... I'm using money as a metaphor for success.
Yeah.
Of a commercial variety. And I think that's very important. Obviously, it's very important to the people in the movie business who put up the money, that from time to time you demonstrate a utility in making commercial movies. But I don't feel responsible for it in every case.
Yeah.
I didn't go into 42 because I thought it was going to make a ton of money.
Right.
A great movie.
It did.
Yeah.
Actually, it made a bunch of money. But that's not why I did it.
So what do you like stepping into it? So like, you know, like a Branch Rickey, do you like stepping into a character that was an actual guy? You have stuff you can research and learn about them, or, you know, or do you like creating someone from scratch?
Both. Yeah. It was nice that there was a matrix for the character, and I found it really helpful and useful, but I also felt it was really fun to not be a leading man, or, you know, not that I am any longer a leading man at this point in my career, but I love playing a character actor a character actor.
Yeah.
That's what I always wanted to do when I started. I never thought I was going to be a leading man. I just didn't ever have that ambition.
Well, what appeals to you about just going in there like character acting?
Living multiple lives, having different experiences, mental entertainment of thinking about it from the point of view of the character, rather than having to think about how do I shoulder this whole son of a bitch and make it, you know, and assume the obligation for the audience to understand everything that I'm doing, because if I lose emotional, when you're a leading man, if you lose emotional contact with the audience, the movie falls apart. In a character part, you can, slip him a Mickey. You can go sideways on him a little bit and gather him back up at another point, because you're not the engine of the whole damn thing.
Yeah. Do you see characters like Solo or Indy, or do you see them as characters? Do you approach them like a character acting, or do you say like, well, this is a guy with a certain set of motivations, and do you approach it that way?
Well, I don't see that there's a difference between.
I guess I think of character, when I think of character acting, it's like, oh, they have a quirk, or they have some sort of a thing about them that makes them character-y, versus just a guy like a Richard Kimball or a Deckard, who's, they're just a guy. Like, they're a guy in a situation, as opposed to, you know, a real character, per se.
Well, I think I approach it the same way, but I know when I'm doing what I know the utility of my efforts when I'm above the title,
mm-hmm.
and I know the utility of my efforts when I'm not.
Do you feel
so? There is a difference.
Yeah.
I don't know how to give any more. Yes, I don't know how to articulate it any more than that.
No, I think that's good. Is there the leading man thing? Is there pressure? Do you not pay attention to it? Did you never pay attention to it?
Oh, yeah, I think there's pressure there, and I think you do pay attention to, because if the movie doesn't work, it's
It's a big black mark in the left-hand column, you know. So you do really have to take responsibility for a movie.
Yeah.
If you're the lean man.
But you essentially got to work...
Except nobody knows what the director looks like. You wear it, I mean, unless it's Spielberg or something, but you wear it.
Your face.
Yeah.
And then your face, you ultimately get blamed for everything, even stuff that has nothing to do with you.
Yeah.
Have you done stuff kind of like what, you know, actors like Edward Norton are known for, where they're just hired to star in a movie, but then end up kind of taking it over in a way of just like, you know, I got to make sure this is going to be good because I'm the face of it, and like, you know, going into like editing or being involved in post in any way?
I can't play the game of like anybody else.
No.
You know, I don't know what that is like. The situation that you're describing, I'm not sure that that is the way Ed Norton saw it. You're asking me to assume that you're...
Well, it's more about the idea of, if you're the lead in a...
I think basically you're talking about from an artistic point
of
you saying, I don't give a shit.
Okay.
Whether this works or not.
Yeah.
I know what I, you know, I know what my character, you know, I'm going to use my best efforts to make my character work. Mm-hmm. And whether the movie works or not, it's not my responsibility. I think, you know, that's a slightly different mindset. And maybe a difference in generation more than a difference in concept.
Yeah.
Or method. Mm-hmm.
Do you like the risk? I mean, like, you know, Star Wars, I think, was risky when they were making it, and I'm sure Blade Runner
wasn't my risk.
Wasn't your risk.
No. I was making $1,000 a week.
That's good money.
Yeah. In the 70s, yeah, that's good.
No risk there.
But with Blade Runner, that wasn't...
Well, it wasn't good money.
Are you kidding me? $1,000 in the 70s?
No, don't be silly. That's ridiculous.
That's good money, right? The 70s, like a nickel is worth $1 million, right?
No.
That obviously changed.
You obviously weren't there.
He was not there. He was not there. What was your first big purchase? Like when you first were like, oh shit, I have money. What was your first... Did you have a fun spree? Did you buy anything fun?
Well, I used to wear $20 watches, and when that battery, you know, gave out, I'd throw them away and buy another one. I bought a watch.
That was it?
That was it, yeah.
Do you really not, does the whole material side of it, you're like, it doesn't really matter.
You mentioned airplanes earlier. You remember? You know,
well, you're a pilot. You don't just collect airplanes.
There's a hole in Daddy's arm where all the money goes. That's aviation. Yeah.
You've been flying for 20 years?
Yeah, about 20 years.
Do you fly? Can you fly? Are you commercially licensed? Could you fly a commercial jetliner if you wanted to?
Yeah. Yeah. I fly the Jedi fly to... We have to train to commercial standards and train every year and renew our licenses and all that stuff.
What appeals to you, like, about flying? Is it just sort of, just is it when you get up there, is that when it appeals to you, or is it sort of even the whole process?
No, all of it. I love the machines. I love the sense of responsibility. I like taking responsibility for myself.
Yeah.
I like... ensuring the outcome of the adventure. I love seeing the world in three dimensions. I like to train. I like to continue to perfect my skills.
Yeah.
And other than that, not much.
Now the fuel's so expensive.
Is it?
I guess to some people.
Yeah.
I have a couple questions from Reddit, some fans who wanted to, this is a fun question.
Is that in Ohio?
Isn't that, Reddit might be in Ohio, but it's also on the internet.
No.
Reddit. For a person who grew up with two first names, what was it like as a person with two last names?
What does that mean?
Good answer.
Are they all like that?
Yes, they are. They really are.
Yeah.
I'm not going to ask you that one.
No, I...
Good.
All right. This is from user My Name Is Taken 87. When you were alone with that blaster, did you ever go, pew, pew, pew?
No.
Good answer. Have you ever stolen a prop from a set? Have you ever?
I don't think it's considered theft at a certain point.
Right.
You know, I mean, if
what are the lines?
If you've done your best work, you know, and everybody satisfied with your behavior, your attitude about the work that you did.
Yeah.
If some small item disappears, I mean, it's what's the harm?
I mean, seriously, it's just going to go sit in a warehouse somehow.
Yeah, and, or my closet. I guess I've always had in my contract that I get all of my clothes.
Yep.
And usually I pick out a watch for a character, and I usually get the watch. So I don't. Everything I wear is comes from a movie.
So you never have to go clothes shopping.
But I don't. I don't steal props, really. I mean, other than the watch. I don't steal anything.
You borrow things.
No, I said, look, I would really like to have that.
And then you stare at them until they're like, wait, just give it to them. So we stop staring.
Something like that.
Because you didn't blink when you did it just a second ago, and that's pretty intimidating. You'd stare someone down.
Yeah. Not on the radio.
Are you always looking for another role, or does it take a special set of circumstances to get you to take a part?
Yeah, I have to like the project. I have to like the people involved. I have to feel they're ambitious to do the best job. And it has to be something different to what I've lately done. And it helps to be in a position of being paid reasonably for it.
Do you know how hard it is to not ask you a bunch of Star Wars questions and Blade Runner questions and Fugitive questions?
Why don't you show me how hard it is? It should be really hard.
It is!
Because there's a history of it not being worth indulging the ambition.
I know.
Yeah, so...
I know.
But, you know, if you want to round this out by wasting your time, give it your best shot.
No, I can't. I'm just going to give you the prop.
I'd rather sit back and watch you try that. Go ahead.
What was the... Talk exactly like that.
No, pretty close.
No, no, that wasn't the question. That was the answer.
Oh, that was the answer. Oh. I can imagine. I mean, like, after, you know.
I've got a question. What is your favorite movie, not that you've worked on, just of, like, your favorite movie of all time to watch?
Touch of Evil.
Oh, nice. Or something else.
Mockingbird.
Okay.
Four Queens, or was it Nine Queens? Argentinian movie.
I've never heard of that. Touch of Evil, though.
Do you still watch movies as just a fan, or do you watch and analyze and deconstruct and?
No, I love to watch movies that I'm not in. My son is obsessed with the Harry Potter movies, and you know that. They're like 4 hours long.
Yeah, I won't watch.
Jesus.
And there's like seven of them.
Yeah.
That's like, it's like 25 hours, 28 hours a movie.
So we watched, you know, I can't remember the last movie I saw that wasn't rated PG-13.
Well, now there's the internet. You can watch whatever you want.
That's what it's for.
Do you loathe the internet? Do you think it's just like a waste of...
No, I think it's very useful for the gathering of misinformation.
It is.
And wasting time.
It's a good... But I feel like that's most of our culture now.
But I don't hate the internet as much as I like social networking. As I dislike
social... As you dislike social networking.
Yeah.
Is it the downfall of our culture?
Yes.
That's the fastest answer he's given. Yes, it is the downfall of our culture.
Did you ever toy with it at all? And were like, this is dumb? Or did you immediately...
No. No. No Facebook page, no Twitter, no nothing.
You cannot follow Harrison Ford at Harrison Ford.
No, you cannot.
No. Do you feel like we're just too... There's just too much information out there?
It's very likely not even information. It's just stuff.
Yeah.
And the notion of living in a virtual community, I think makes it difficult for young people to recognize that there's a real world to participate in, where you actually are who you say you are, and you can't just press a button to get liked. And that you have a community that you live in to which you're responsible and known.
Mm-hmm.
In that community, if you break windows in somebody else's neighborhood and stuff, people know who you are.
Yeah, you're basically accountable for your actions.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Then sort of bleeding into that, and then lastly, we'll wrap it up because I know you have to go. Is it? Do you feel like because of you know who you are in the world that you do you feel sort of isolated from the rest of the world at all?
No,
you don't.
Not at all.
Because you can't really go anywhere without.
Oh, I can.
Really?
Well, I mean, not without, but I doesn't. You know, I'm used to the. I like people. I like real. I like the real world. I like. Seeing and meeting people, and how to make them get over who they think I am.
Yeah, how do you do that?
Huh?
How do you do that?
Treat them like shit. It's worked for you, hasn't it?
But you have to be you in order to pull that off. Like you're the 0.00001% of the world. Really, just you.
I'm not a 1%er.
That can pull that off. Harrison, it was really nice to meet you. Thank you so much for chatting with us for an hour. Enjoy your burrito, everyone.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by Carbonite.com. Carbonite is online backup made easy. Plans start at just $59.99 a year. Start your free trial today at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Nerdist to get 2 bonus months with purchase.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuge, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the new kids and family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.